Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Thanks to Vodafone Business. With cybersecurity solutions from Vodafone, your business can hack off the hackers. See vodafone.ie/business.
This is News Talk.
Yeah, you're very welcome to the show. Coming to you this week from Las Vegas as CES 2025 comes to a close. Over the next hour, I'll bring you inside the biggest tech event of the year, where we'll hear how EVs played a dominant role in the show. I'll meet the Irish e-bike company showcasing at the event, and we'll look at some of the weird and wonderful too. As always, you can email the show techtalk@newstalk.com, or you'll find me on Instagram at JessKellyNT. Later in the show, we'll look at the 5-minute video posted by Mark Zuckerberg earlier in the week, in which he announced the end of fact checkers on his platforms in the US and what it means for those of us in Europe. I hope the first full week of 2025 has treated you well. I have had an amazing week. Now, it started with taking down the Christmas tree. That now feels like it was about a million years ago. But since then, I flew to New York on my way to here in Las Vegas. And I'll tell you about my travels in a little while, because I stayed in the most amazing hotel in New York. But before we get to that, let's jump right into CES. I said a few times here on News Talk during the week that this is the biggest tech event in the world. And here's just some of the numbers to stack that up. So there were more than 1,000 guest speakers, 1,400 startups showcasing what they have in Eureka Park, and over 15,000 exhibit booths with more than 135,000 attendees. This event really does take over the entire city. You could spend every waking moment just walking through the exhibition halls and still barely scratch the surface. I spent a fair bit of my time here at CES down at the Convention Center, which has four main halls all looking at different things. So from, you know, consumer products, wearables, and the random inventions that I could never in a billion years dream up. But alongside that, you also had the very established companies doing major launches. I've seen LG, I've seen Samsung, and I'll talk you through those later on. But there's also been a significant presence from the motoring companies. So what was a number of years ago just the odd car here and there, it has now transformed completely. I was down at a BMW media event in which I got to see their new panoramic iDrive X. But directly after that, I walked into one of the convention halls where I caught up with Derek Riley of Nevo.ie.
So after years of threatening it, Derek, we are finally in Las Vegas at CES together. How many times have you been to CES before?
This is my second, so still a newbie, still kind of getting my bearings, whereas I know you've been to a couple of them.
Yeah, I've been to quite a few. I haven't been in a few years now, and I know later on we will talk about the EV side of things, but I want to get your perception of CES versus the reality of CES, because a lot of tech fans, which I know you are, would watch from afar. But obviously, as motoring became more and more and EVs became more and more a key part of it, you have now come to it. So talk me through that sort of Instagram versus reality version of CES.
I think it's the scale. It's absolutely massive. Like 230,000 square meters, 60 football pitches, as in soccer, not American football pitches. 100,000 people expected, 4,000 companies. Like, it is vast. It is, what time is it now? 2 o'clock, and I've done 15,000 steps. And I haven't even started.
Yeah.
I'm just getting my bearings, figuring out what's going on. And so as much as we'll see short form snippets on social or long form actual full reviews of products, you could be here for 3 weeks and not cover everything. So you really have to pick and choose. I'm okay because I'm niching into EV stuff, but obviously, Jess, you'll be doing a bit more of all the other wacky and weird stuff.
Yeah, I do anticipate by the end of today. So just for yourselves, we are obviously not live on Saturday. We are in the middle of the week. This is my first full day in Vegas, and I'm around 12,000 steps with my little sausage dog legs. I fully anticipate hitting probably around 30,000 akin to Electric Picnic. So I'm excited. But this is something that people who've never been don't fully grasp. It's not just in an RDS type venue. We are currently in one of many buildings the size of the RDS, and there are quite a few here at the convention center. And then you have, you know, in the conference halls of some of the hotels, casinos, other briefings going on. Yep. So we've been up and down the strip like yo-yos. Yeah. Do you find it enjoyable, or are you purely here for work? Because I have an answer which I will give you after you answer first.
I do enjoy it because it is my, I'm very lucky to work in an industry I'm passionate about. But to sit in a room yesterday and to hear the US market talk about how to break that EV plateau, they're at 8% market penetration, whereas in Ireland this year, 2024, we finished at around 14-15%. So I can sit in a room and go, it's coming down the line in this market. And it's interesting to look at a technology-focused audience, and not everybody's driving EV, because it's not there yet in America, whereas in Europe and other markets, it's a lot more advanced. So I do enjoy it. It is still not a holiday, as much as both of our colleagues and friends and family all think, oh, you're off to Las Vegas.
Yeah.
I was in bed last night at 9 o'clock. I was up early this morning, like you, getting a day's work done before you even start here. So there's lots of that side of things, but the educational content, the seminars, if you're into it, yes, there's good stuff there as well. But it is a North American focus, a lot of it. But there is a global twist to it as well. There's a lot of stuff here from Asia. And it kind of is a foothold into their North American market for them as well. So you can see them launching products here. Sunday we had the CES unveiled. A lot of wacky and weird stuff again that I wouldn't normally feature, but I kind of sprinkle it into my own socials, but you'll be all over it, Jess.
Yeah, no, I and this is why it is absolutely a work event. I am here for work, but it is like nerdy Christmas, because although I am niche, I'm not as niche as you. So everything and anything is, you know, my wheelhouse. And there is something for everyone. I do love the weird and wonderful devices. Like, I was talking to Pat Kenny back on Tuesday about the robot vacuum cleaner that can pick up your
the
dirty socks. Like, I wouldn't think that we would ever need that.
Is it technically an EV because it's on wheels? Well,
you'll review it anyway if they sent you one. And in terms of the brands that are here, because I remember, I think it was like 2018 when I was here, Ford probably had the biggest one that I noticed anyway of the motoring company's biggest displays. There wasn't much of a talk about EVs, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
But this year I've probably seen more from the manufacturers, and a lot of talk about not only EVs but the future of transportation as well in all modes. What would be your sort of analytical summary of where we are and how and why it's happened here at CES?
I think it's because of that. It's consumer electronics show. It is the parts, the components that make it all work together. And an electric vehicle has that holographic windscreen, has that AI-enabled route mapping, has that way of charging your car better, faster, smarter. So there's lots of components in CES that makes electric vehicles better. And so that's why you're getting a lot more of that EV involvement. Now it comes in peaks and troughs. Last year I felt it was a bit more EV, and there was even a war history of electric vehicles between the North Hall and the West Hall, whereas this year there's not as much. So it definitely, some manufacturers were here last year, aren't here this year. BMW North America are here. We had a chance to have a look at some of their technology. We can chat about that in a bit. But Hyundai, but it's not Hyundai as we know it, it's Hyundai Mobis, which is the component part of that large conglomerate that is Hyundai, and they're showcasing the likes of a holographic windscreen. So lots of interest and stuff like that. Brands-wise, we're getting some North American brands, a lot of RV stuff, recreational vehicles that we wouldn't get back home in Ireland or in Europe because it's 27 foot long. I think it's longer than Balmullet. You know what I mean? It is. But you're getting Scout, which is a new US brand. Will we ever see it outside the North American market? So, yeah, interesting to see the different manufacturers and what they do, whether they come or not. And sometimes they're not here as a name on the stand, but they may have their product on somebody else's stand.
Yeah, I've noticed that too. A lot of, I suppose, because, you know, the cars, there's so many different components. There's so many pieces of software. There's so many apps. There's just like a myriad of little bits and pieces that go into a vehicle. So you are seeing brands being featured. Of the brands that you mentioned there that aren't in Europe or may not come to Europe, is it of value to you with your Nevo hat on to see the appetite of the industry outside of Ireland and outside of Europe, and to get an idea of what is coming down the tracks, you know, in other parts of the world, yes. But overall, the appetite clearly is healthy enough.
Absolutely, yeah. And I'm looking forward to, I'm planning on going to Shanghai in summertime, going to their motor show. And so there's either ends of the extreme there, whereas Europe sits in the middle, not geographically, well, yes, geographically, but also in adoption side of things. Whereas when I go to Shanghai, I'm expecting to see a lot more, well, it is going to be all electric vehicles, it's a motor show as well. Whereas the American CES side of things, it's a bit more foot in the water, let's ease people into it. We don't have Tesla here, I'm not sure if Tesla have ever exhibited here, but you do have other brands that we may not get in Europe, as you mentioned, but I'm looking to see what they're doing with their electric vehicles, because European and global manufacturers will start to emulate, copy, etc., the highest form of flattery. And so it's great. I really enjoy being here to see the trends, and it might not be the first generation of electric vehicles in the North American market. It might be on Gen 2 or Gen 3, that market adoption, all of that kind of stuff can, because we're gone past that early adopter phase, so now we're in that mass market, and it's a different type of buyer. They don't want things too outlandish, too outrageous. They don't want too many screens. And so you can start to see some manufacturers tweaking their product offering because we're going on to that next segment of the market.
Yeah. One thing, and this is my stupid question of the week. I have one for you every time. But when you say, look at what the different manufacturers are doing in terms of their EVs, how different is an EV offering from brand X versus brand Y?
Underneath, it's a motor, it's a battery, it's four wheels, yeah. Sometimes three wheels. But the actual implementation of how they do it, like we talked about BMW, they're not just BMW, they're Mini and Rolls Royce. So you're talking a small fashion orientated, more hippie brand in a Mini, then BMW, serious, entrepreneur, successful, etc., and then Rolls Royce, luxury. But all in underneath that, it's the same software, it's the same hardware, nearly sometimes as well, battery, etc., motors, etc. And so how they build on top of it, the shell that they plonk on top of it, as we said in the past, I'm sure they don't just plonk it, it is very much that, the implementation of it. Because in essence, it's just a platform in underneath. And I know Suzuki are here, and they have just that, it's a platform with four wheels. And they say, well, what do you want to put on top of it? Do you want to move pallets around the warehouse? It'll do that. Do you want to transport boxes in a logistics company? We can set up a body for that. And so it's interesting to see how they're doing that kind of stuff as well.
Yeah. You mentioned BMW. So we were at their press conference on Tuesday. We had a bit of Hollywood. We had Tim Meadows and Ken Jeong doing some wonderful banter. But they showcased their panoramic iDrive. As you know, I don't drive. So can you, in a smart way, just summarize what it is and, I suppose, the unique selling point of it?
Yeah, we saw this last year with IAA in the Neue Klasse in Hanover. And what they've done is they've taken the driver cluster, and they've moved it up and stretched it out to the right at the bottom of the windscreen. So that when you're driving along, you've got that all that information, as little or as much as you want, sitting at the bottom of that windscreen. It has the critical stuff, the speed sign recognition, your speed, what mode you're in. But then you've got spaces along the right-hand side and left-hand drive markets in it, and the opposite and right-hand drive markets, where you can put little modules into it. Do you want a compass to know your bearings? Do you want your Spotify module widget? So it's like a personalized, really narrow screen along the bottom of the windscreen. Above that then is your head-up display. So you do have that stuff even in more line of sight. And it has that central screen then as well. So that's the three elements. And they're talking about the steering wheel and how that, and they talk about shy tech. And so what that is when something is going to be engaged, it highlights itself on the steering wheel. When it hasn't got the right conditions, like a highway driving or motorway driving, it doesn't show itself through the steering wheel. So that shy tech involvement is there. So they really highlighted those four main touch points or interaction points on that dash of the vehicle that we've seen so far this morning in that premiere.
Yeah. So I did a VR demo of it. When we've had conversations about heads-up displays and infotainment systems in general, I'm always a bit skeptical. Now, again, I'm not a driver, but I would be concerned about the distraction factor. And having done the VR demo, I completely see the benefit of it, because it's not like when you turn on your smart TV and there's all these big, you know, app logos flashy in front of you. It's a very, very subtle, very neat bar. And the key information is in your direct line of sight. And as you said, then you can customize it. And I just thought it was incredibly neat. I also really like the steering wheel as well, because the buttons were clearly labeled.
Yep.
You get a bit of haptic feedback, yep, when you press them. And it meant then that, and I wasn't driving an actual car, but I wasn't looking down at it. Like, yes. I was just keeping my eyes on the road.
And you knew whether you've engaged it or not engaged, whatever you're thinking about engaging.
Yeah. But I want to know if you understand the concerns around the distraction nature of these, of this technology, because although there are other vehicles that have massive big center console screens that are bigger than the iPad Pro, you could easily see how a screenshot of a demo of this could go viral and people would give out about it. Yes. But from the time that I've had with it, I didn't find it that distracting at all.
No, and they talked about how they've looked at competitors where there's going to be a screen literally from one pillar to the other pillar right the way across. Yeah. I'm going to be looking at the Sony Honda Afila, which is very much that. It is a massive wide screen with lots of different things going on. Whereas with BMW's implementation of it and interpretation of it, as you said, it's very subtle, and they're going to have an actual a quiet or a silent mode where all the distraction gets taken away and just the bare minimum is given to you with regards to your speed, what's the speed sign recognition, what's it saying the speed limit is in that area. So if you want as much or as little, and you can set that up to your personal profile, so no matter what BMW you go into, that's how it knows you like to drive. And you might be more alert in the morning times, less, giving a bit more interaction, or in the evening times, do you know what, I just want the speed and I want the satellite navigation to get home because my brain is fried.
Yeah.
A bit like Jess now after a number of hours here at CES.
Correct. Absolutely right. But it's funny, they have demo cars outside and when you look in them, it's a pretty naked car.
Yes.
It's very, very spacious, and even the VR demo gave that sensation of no clutter, no junk. Again, from a stylistic point of view and a fashion point of view, or whatever statement you want to make with your car, do you think that's a good thing or a bad thing?
They're very much going leading towards lounges at the moment, and that's what they like to talk about, that it's not a, you're not sitting in a car, you're sitting in somewhere where you want to be, whether you're commuting home or whether you're going on a long road trip, and it's about making sure that you as a driver is taking, your comfort is taken into consideration, but also that visible, that noise, that clutter. Now, some people still want bring back knobs, they want buttons, all that kind of stuff, so it is a balancing act as to how much physical interaction is there, how busy or how, like, you walk in, you sit in some of the older vehicles from 10, 15 years ago, and it's like a fighter pilot jet.
Yeah.
There's so many buttons and knobs and twiddles this and all that kind of stuff.
And you need a degree to figure out what each of them do.
Yes.
Every time, again, as a passenger, I get in, I'm like, where is the aircon button on this car from 1999? I don't understand. I don't get it.
And so what they've done is they've taken sample sets of their customers, their existing customers in BMW land, and say, okay, look at our first-time buyer that's a BMW buyer, might be in their 30s or 40s, but also look at somebody who's driven BMW all their lives. Mm-hmm. How do they interact with the car? Do they still want a volume knob that they can turn up and turn down? So they've really thought about this because it is something totally different from BMWs currently. It is going to be the next step up, but it's going to be in every single BMW moving forward. So they really have to make sure this works, because if it doesn't work, and we had that with other brands where they went haptic, where they went touch, and people don't like it. And that those other brands, Volkswagen, are going back to buttons on the steering wheel, going back to buttons below the radio and the air conditioning, etc. So it'll be interesting to see how this actually goes into, as much as we did VR, to actually drive it. We're going to see the car, the iX3, all going well, which is the Neue Klasse at IAA in September, and so we're looking forward to getting sit inside it and see what it's actually like. But because VR is great, but it's all about the touch, the feel, and getting bums on seats.
Yeah, and it's that longer term thing as well, right? Because what might seem cool when you are driving around a dealership or whatever, on day 3 or 4, when you haven't had your coffee and you're just trying to get to work and you can't lower the radio, you know, sometimes the old ways are the old ways for a reason, like they do work.
Yeah, and you can see a bit of that with Euro NCAP talking about how they want more, a bit more physical interaction, so that when you are making a tricky maneuver and you want the radio off, how do you mute that radio really fast?
Yeah.
It's a button, it's a knob. It's not telling the car, it's not swiping this or doing a hand gesture. They're all there, but in a moment where you need concentration on the road, how do you do that straight away? If you're a bit tired, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Briefly, because we're going to take a break now, but before we do, you mentioned there about, like, you know, talking, telling the radio to shut up, not that you ever would, but voice control, we've talked about this on the show before. It's a very natural way to engage, but voice and accent recognition is vital.
Yeah.
Have we seen much of a talk or much focus on voice control and voice activation in cars here?
Yeah, we're looking at the likes of large language models, the LLMs, the ChatGPTs, and they're very good at understanding different, because it's not being programmed on one single set of accents. It's learning all the time from the different accents, whether it's the Dublin accent, whether it's the Mayo accent, the difference in the Mayo accents from Ballina to Ballymullet. It has to know it all the time. And so we're seeing the benefit of that large language model set learning from different language uses, and when they get something wrong, it learns and understands from it. Whereas the old way, if it got something wrong, you just had to say the name differently.
Yeah.
You had to fit to it, not it fitting to you. So we're getting a bit of that. A lot of AI talk at the show this year, as you probably cover already, but not so much in the EV space, but it's in there, but they're just not shouting about it as much.
Okay, when we come back here on News Talk, we're going to delve a little bit deeper into the unsexy side of EVs at CES. As always, if you want to get in touch, you can drop me an email, techtalk@newstalk.com. We'll be right back.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Welcome back to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. I am standing on the floor of the Las Vegas Convention Center. Derek Riley of Nevo.ie is still with me. So Derek, we were talking about, you know, VR demos. We were talking about fancy launches with Hollywood stars. But there's also a serious educational side to CES too. Tell me a little bit about what you were learning and if it was of value.
Yeah, just understanding the difference in the different market sizes. That I sat in a room talking about EV adoption plateaus in the North American market and what we're going to do. And it's the same thing we're talking about back home in Ireland. It's improving that charging network. It's getting the education out there to people who haven't got into electric vehicles. A lot of it is about bums on seats. It's about getting people into test drives. We were very successful with that at our recent EV show. So somebody that is interested in going electric, it's a big jump for them. They're filled with petrol or diesel all of their life, and they're like, they're hearing about all these different things. There might be some FUD in the media, and so they're a bit concerned. So going out and test driving and driving an electric vehicle for a half an hour for a weekend, it really starts to settle the nerves. And again, North America, whatever market it is, a lot of it is down to that. Is that taking away the myths and also giving the experience of what's it like to drive an electric vehicle.
And has there been any talk around the solutions beyond just getting people in and sitting them in a car? Because that's not going to happen. Like, you're not going to get everybody in, right? Is there more that needs to be done? You know, on the show a few months back, you were explaining the changes to the grants available, for example. Like, is that something that needs to be revised from a global standpoint, perhaps? Or are the CO2 emission targets, is that enough of an incentive to try and get people in? Like, what is the solution here?
We did a survey with Nevo, and we found that the number one reason people go electric is cost.
Okay.
And so that's running cost of how much is it to fuel my petrol or diesel car? God, that's costing a lot. How can I reduce that running cost? Electric are a winner there. And one of the talks that we're talking about, how people should think about what's my monthly cost to running my vehicle, the repayment on the PCP or the HP or the car loan that you got from the credit union, plus the fuel that goes into it.
Yeah.
And so rather than thinking, oh, it cost me €250 a month to pay back my car, it's actually costing me €375 a month to run my car as well as repay it back. So that €125 of a difference, okay, how can I reduce that? Because the payment can't be reduced. It is the running costs, and electric vehicles win out on that a lot of the times if you're able to charge at home. And so that education piece, that running costs, that's a huge driver for people going electric.
Okay. I want to talk about other mobility solutions, because one of the things that I'm fascinated by is the future of our cities. And as someone who's heavily reliant on public transport, I am all about whatever gets people from A to B in a smooth way, without congestion and without paying €1,000,001 in a taxi, which I've done recently. Has there been anything eye-catching or innovative, in your opinion, outside of the EV space?
So you're talking everything from two wheels. I saw on Sunday the world's first electrically powered roller skates. You want to take your life into your own hand. And so they have a little motor in the wheels, and so you can utilize a battery pack that sits in the back of your belt, and that will go 40 miles or whatever that is, converted into 70 odd kilometers. And so ways like that, there's a lot of e-bikes here, there's some scooters here. I also saw a mobility solution for people that maybe not be able to walk. So I called it a mobility solution, I call it a wheelchair, but it's a lot of brand or a lot of marketing buff going on in CES as well. This one was interesting because it has a 3D sensing LiDAR on it. And so it doesn't drive itself, but it makes the person who's sitting in it aware of, do you know what, there's a lip there, there's a step there. So it's constantly mapping the world around it, and it's called a co-pilot. by Strutt, Strutt. So it's interesting to see stuff like that as well. So it's not always about people with abilities. It could be people, somebody with a disability, they have to get around as well, and how technology is able to help them.
We obviously, and we're going to talk about it a little bit later in the show, saw Mark Zuckerberg making changes to Meta and content moderation. But one point that he made that jumps out to me is that he essentially said that Europe is making it harder for technology and innovation because of all the rules and regulations and all the rest. Stepping away from content moderation, just because I don't want to give you that headache, from, again, an electric vehicle point of view, and from an e-mobility point of view, has Europe done enough to help or hinder greener solutions for our cities?
Absolutely help, I would say, because of those carbon targets. A lot of manufacturers wouldn't be doing what they're doing today if it wasn't for EU to say, you need to hit this target or else you're going to be fined. And so as much as they say that they all want to reduce their carbon footprint and reduce their carbon emissions on the back of the products that they're selling, with the EU saying you need to reach a certain gram per kilometre driven across your fleet that you're selling, and 2025 that's being dropped again, and strangely enough we've got cheaper cars in the market, we've got more cars in the market. The sceptical minded among you, Jess, and others would say, God, that's a coincidence. But it's very interesting to see that manufacturers that said that we couldn't make, or they weren't interested in making, more affordable electric vehicles, strangely enough, are now bringing them to market, and people are going, oh, I can now afford that electric vehicle, I'm going to buy it. And that's helping the brand hit their carbon targets so they don't get fined. And so it's just strange how that's working out. But so European Union definitely helping in that. Some people say it's a lot of oversight and a lot of Big Brother is watching, but I think it's for the better for everybody, because if those carbon targets weren't there, we would still be living with smelly and polluting vehicles in the marketplace, cities and towns.
Yeah. Okay, my final question. This is our first chat of 2025. I don't know if you brought it with you, but I need you to take out your crystal ball and make some predictions.
I bring it with me everywhere.
I know you do. So, like we've said a million times, we're kind of bored of the conversation, some of the conversations in relation to EVs. But when you look ahead, is 2025 going to be a turning point in terms of this conversation? And what will make that happen? And what do you predict will happen?
I think because we're going to see more affordable electric vehicles, a lot more people are going to be able to purchase them. It may not be for their primary vehicle, it might be for their secondary vehicle, so you've got that. So I think 2024, there was a lot of talk of the market being down versus 2023. We've talked about the reasons for this in the past. So I don't know what some of the media are going to talk about this year when EV market share is going to increase. More affordable electric vehicles are on the market as well. The charging network is getting stronger. There's a lot of positives here. 2025, a lot of people would have bought their first EV back in 2022, and they've come to the end of their 3-year PCP, HP financial product, and now they're going into another electric vehicle. All of those vehicles are going to be on the second-hand market, so a lot more people are going to be able to afford electric vehicles. I'm really bullish on 2025. I'm a positive guy anyway, and I'm all positive about electric vehicles, and so every year I think it's going to be better. So yes, it was a tough pill to swallow this year to see market share down and the media being able to use that as a stick to batter the EV industry. But do you know what? I'm really excited for 2025 and what we're going to see. Bigger, better, more value, easier for people to get into electric vehicles, because that's what it is. It's about reducing that friction, getting the education out there. We've been doing this for years now, Jess, and as we said before, it's day one for somebody every single day going into that electric vehicle journey. But I think there's more and more positive stories out there. 9 out of 10 people, we've got that information from Bank of Ireland, that said when somebody goes into an electric vehicle, they stay in an electric vehicle. 9 out of 10 people, that's a phenomenal return referral rate back into an electric. Things were as bad as sometimes the media, not us, Jess.
Not us.
No. Not specifically this talk show. but joking aside, yeah, it's you know, I'm positive about it, and I only want people to go to electric vehicle if it suits them.
Yeah, and you say that all the time. It's not going to work for everyone.
No.
And like, there are certain people that would ask you, should I buy one? And I'm sure you would say no.
No, yeah. I just couldn't be dealing with them coming back to me and crying and saying that it didn't work out. But joking aside, I've got 4 siblings. 3 of them drive. None of them are driving electric at the moment. So if I can't, it's not about me convincing. It's about getting the word education out there, getting the facts. It's all about the facts. Mm-hmm. And there's plenty of disinformation and misinformation out there. But yeah, I'm positive for 2025. Bigger, better, stronger, faster.
And more here on Tech Talk with Derek Riley of Nevo.ie. Derek, thank you so much.
Thank you, Jess.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
How I wish that there were more than 24 hours in the day. Even if there were 40 more, I wouldn't sleep a minute away. Oh, there's blackjack and poker and a roulette wheel, a fortune won and lost on every deal. All you need is a strong heart and a nerve of steel.
Viva Las Vegas! Viva Las Vegas!
Yeah, it had to be done. This week's show is coming to you from Las Vegas, where CES 2025 has been taking place. I mentioned earlier that I stayed in the coolest hotel when I was on a one-night layover in New York. It's called TWA Hotel, and the reason I'm telling you about it is because it's attached to Terminal 5 at JFK Airport. It used to be a terminal, but it was converted into a hotel 5 years ago. And if you're an aviation geek like me, you will absolutely love it. It's kind of part hotel, part museum. If you like walk up to it, it looks like something from, you know, Back to the Future. And they are playing music from the 60s. There's a lot of retro airline uniforms from when TWA was in action. It feels incredibly authentic and like you're being transported to that time. The hotel bar is actually an old plane called Connie, which is set out on the tarmac. And you can go up, climb the steps and go in and have a drink on board Connie, which is incredible. And then up on top of the hotel, there is a rooftop pool that overlooks the runway. It's a heated pool and it overlooks the runways of the airport. Needless to say, I didn't get in for a swim, but I very much appreciated the views. So if you're ever doing what I did, which is needing somewhere to stay very close to the airport in New York, definitely check it out. I absolutely loved it. But let's go back to technology for a quick minute. Before the break, I was chatting to Derek Riley of Nevo.ie about some of the news and announcements from the motoring and mobility space. And he mentioned e-bikes. Now they, alongside e-scooters, do make up a portion of the mobility sector around our cities here in Europe. And on Tuesday afternoon, I went to the Palazzo Hotel to meet with an Irish company showcasing at CES. They're called Kuma Bikes, and I met with the founder, Kevin Lacey.
We're an Irish e-bike company, so we design e-bikes based out of Dublin. We sell to consumers, B2B, we kind of sell all over Europe.
And tell me, like, just for those who don't know, what's the difference between a bike and an e-bike? Because we've obviously heard a lot about electric scooters. E-bikes, I wouldn't have thought, are as common. So what is that distinction between a normal bike and an e-bike?
So e-bikes are, the e-bikes we do, they're pedal assist e-bikes. So basically they help you when you cycle. So basically you've got a motor, but it assists you. So you can choose from either basically full assistance where the bike does everything, or you can go like five levels all the way down to like just a gentle assist or zero. So basically it allows you to, if you want, be lazy, do all the work, or if not, you can get a bit of exercise. They're a great like tool for commuters. Well, a kind of mix of everything, really.
Yeah, it is that sort of, I'd say, first mile, last mile kind of device. And the fact that it has the assist in it means you can go that little bit further rather than just getting that first mile, last mile. You can do a whole journey on it.
Yeah, exactly. Like our bikes, you can get up to 100 kilometers range out of them. So like a lot of people will use them for work. A lot of people use, and leisure as well. So for work, maybe people will cycle into work, get a bit of exercise, but on the way home, then you can put it up to five and just get home.
Okay.
And then like that, if you're going on a long journey at the weekend, you can maybe cycle where you want to go and then get lunch, get dinner, and then power your way home, kind of thing.
And tell me a little bit about the development of them. So you said that it's an Irish company. How long have you been in existence and how did you get to where you are today?
So we started in 2018 as a kind of nearly a hobby by myself. I've industrial design background and I wanted to get into doing my own thing. So it started like that. And it grew from there. And then COVID was a huge boost for us. So when everyone else shut down, the bike industry boomed. So that's what really took off. And it allowed me to design a product, which I always wanted to do, but just me. And it's kind of like a passion project that turned into a business, if you know what I mean. Yeah.
Are people curious about e-bikes? Maybe they haven't bought one yet, but they're interested. Do you see it going on an upward trajectory?
Oh yeah, 100%. It's crazy because it's a very much word of mouth thing. Because people see the advertisement for e-bikes, like you said, they don't understand what they are. There's a lot of confusion. There's a lot of, there's a lot of illegal e-bikes that people see with, like, throttles and stuff like that. And they think, like, oh, that's what an e-bike is. But then, like I said, word of mouth's huge because you have a lot of our customers are, say, a son bought one. And then all of a sudden the parents buy them and then friends buy them. And that's a huge thing for us because... like a crazy stat we have, it's like we're 80% test ride to purchase.
Wow.
Because people have never been on one and they just don't know what they are. And it's a very hard thing to, like I describe it, it's like swimming. You can't describe it. Do you know what I mean? It's a very hard thing. So what we just try to do is get people on them.
Yeah.
And once you're on it, you kind of see what it is. It's not a great pitch when I say it's hard to describe, but that's what it's like. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's... the best way we find is just you have to get people on them, you know, because once you try one, like, everyone is hooked.
Yeah. And what has you here at CES?
So we are here, I'm here with Pebblebee, so they're a tracker company. They're one of the first tracking companies that uses like the Apple AirTag and the Android, like both Find My. So they're registered both on Android and Apple, basically Find My. And they're launching a new bike specific tracker. So they've chose Kuma bikes to launch the tracker with. So going into 2025, all our bikes will be fitted with these trackers. And we're going to be the first ever e-bike company with that functionality built in.
How did you strike up that partnership? Because that's a great recognition to get for a company that's still quite young.
Yeah, it was... I've been looking for trackers for years. So I designed my own GPS tracker for a while. We tested it using SIM cards. I tried a lot of companies, and to be honest, it's been a nightmare. And I saw Pebblebee just launching their product, I think it was 2 or 3 months ago. I reached out to them, just to purchase product, and it was just, struck up a conversation, gone really well with them. Founder, met him. To be honest, it was like we just got on great and they loved the bikes and they were like, just do you want to do it with us? And I was like, yeah, why not, you know?
It's an amazing opportunity. How have you found the experience of being at CES? Because as we were talking about earlier in the show, the scale of this, similar to your bikes, it's very hard to describe just how big this place is and just how many people you're chatting to throughout the day. So from your point of view, how has it been so far?
Crazy. Hectic. So we're at a booth, ST Semiconductor, actually Microelectronics. So that booth that we're on, like, they are a gigantic company. They do all the hardware for every company you can ever imagine, all the big names. I mean, to even be on the booth, it's like you need a clearance to get on the booth. So it's like all of a sudden we're thrown into a world that's just, you know, it's a different level to anything. Even any of the European shows I've been at, it's just, you know, incredible opportunity for us. Like, and everyone loves the bikes, and everyone's like reaching out to me, and they all love the story. And it's just a great opportunity. And I don't know, it's like being in a washing machine.
I would fully concur. If people want to find out more information, where can they go?
KumaBikes.com. That's where we are. We're in about 30. Our bikes are available in about 30 bike shops in Ireland, and we have our own stores. We're actually just opening a new flagship store in Cork. It's actually opening literally today Ireland.
Congratulations.
Yeah, and I'm here, but it's not great timing. But we have our own stores in Dublin as well, and we have a lot of great bike shop partners all over Ireland, and they've been great to us. And everyone loves the story of an Irish company. And yeah, anyway.
Congratulations and best of luck with the future. Thank you so much.
Thanks very much.
Yeah, that was Kevin Lacey chatting to me about Kuma Bikes and the incredible success they've had so far. I'm going to have more from CES for you next week. There was more I wanted to bring you this week, but I really want to talk about the announcement made by Mark Zuckerberg this week in relation to content moderation on Meta platforms. It has definitely been a talking point on the ground here in Las Vegas, but it is something that is going to impact everyone, regardless of your level of interest or knowledge about technology. Before we talk through it, I want to bring you the comments in full because there's quite a bit to unpack. So here is exactly what he said.
Hey everyone, I want to talk about something important today because it's time to get back to our roots around free expression on Facebook and Instagram. I started building social media to give people a voice. I gave a speech at Georgetown 5 years ago about the importance of protecting free expression, and I still believe this today. But a lot has happened over the last several years. There's been widespread debate about potential harms from online content. Governments and legacy media have pushed to censor more and more. A lot of this is clearly political, but there's also a lot of legitimately bad stuff out there. Drugs, terrorism, child exploitation. These are things that we take very seriously, and I want to make sure that we handle responsibly. So we built a lot of complex systems to moderate content. But the problem with complex systems is they make mistakes. Even if they accidentally censor just 1% of posts, that's millions of people. And we've reached a point where it's just too many mistakes and too much censorship. The recent elections also feel like a cultural tipping point towards once again prioritizing speech. So we're going to get back to our roots and focus on reducing mistakes, simplifying our policies, and restoring free expression on our platforms. More specifically, here's what we're going to do. First, we're going to get rid of fact checkers and replace them with community notes, similar to X, starting in the US. After Trump first got elected in 2016, the legacy media wrote nonstop about how misinformation was a threat to democracy. We tried in good faith to address those concerns without becoming the arbiters of truth. But the fact checkers have just been too politically biased and have destroyed more trust than they've created, especially in the US. So over the next couple of months, we're going to phase in a more comprehensive community notes system. Second, we're going to simplify our content policies and get rid of a bunch of restrictions on topics like immigration and gender that are just out of touch with mainstream discourse. What started as a movement to be more inclusive has increasingly been used to shut down opinions and shut out people with different ideas, and it's gone too far. So I want to make sure that people can share their beliefs and experiences on our platforms. Third, we're changing how we enforce our policies to reduce the mistakes that account for the vast majority of censorship on our platforms. We used to have filters that scanned for any policy violation. Now, we're going to focus those filters on tackling illegal and high-severity violations. And for lower-severity violations, we're going to rely on someone reporting an issue before we take action. The problem is that the filters make mistakes, and they take down a lot of content that they shouldn't. So by dialing them back, we're going to dramatically reduce the amount of censorship on our platforms. We're also going to tune our content filters to require much higher confidence before taking down content. The reality is that this is a trade-off. It means we're going to catch less bad stuff, but we'll also reduce the number of innocent people's posts and accounts that we accidentally take down. Fourth, we're bringing back civic content. For a while, the community asked to see less politics because it was making people stressed, so we stopped recommending these posts. But it feels like we're in a new era now, and we're starting to get feedback that people want to see this content again. So we're going to start phasing this back into Facebook, Instagram, and Threads while working to keep the communities friendly and positive. Fifth, we're going to move our trust and safety and content moderation teams out of California, and our US-based content review is going to be based in Texas. As we work to promote free expression, I think that it will help us build trust to do this work in places where there is less concern about the bias of our teams. Finally, we're going to work with President Trump to push back on governments around the world that are going after American companies and pushing to censor more. The US has the strongest constitutional protections for free expression in the world. Europe has an ever-increasing number of laws institutionalizing censorship and making it difficult to build anything innovative there. Latin American countries have secret courts that can order companies to quietly take things down. China has censored our apps from even working in the country. The only way that we can push back on this global trend is with the support of the US government. And that's why it's been so difficult over the past 4 years when even the US government has pushed for censorship. By going after us and other American companies, it has emboldened other governments to go even further. But now we have the opportunity to restore free expression, and I am excited to take it. It'll take time to get this right, and these are complex systems, they're never going to be perfect. There's also a lot of illegal stuff that we still need to work very hard to remove. But the bottom line is that after years of having our content moderation work focus primarily on removing content, it is time to focus on reducing mistakes, simplifying our systems, and getting back to our roots about giving people voice. I'm looking forward to this next chapter. Stay good out there, and more to come soon.
So that's the full statement from Mark Zuckerberg on the changes to fact-checking on Meta platforms. There's quite a few things that jumped out at me. Obviously, there's the dig at the current US administration. We know that Joe Biden has for many, many years, long before he was in the White House, been critical of big tech. And Zuckerberg et al. Have obviously felt that. But I do wonder what this new system will look and feel like for users in the US. I was also struck by the notion of news and politics being filtered once again back onto Meta platforms. And the way Mark Zuckerberg mentioned that, for me anyway, was a real reminder of how, you know, what we see on social media is not the full picture. Algorithms and the people in charge of these companies decide what we see and what we don't see. And it is something that they can control and they can alter if and when it suits them. The big question I have is, what will this mean for users? We all know what's coming down the tracks in America in just a matter of days. And the world, you know, every part of the world is continuing to go through a very turbulent period. And I just don't know what the removal of fact checkers is going to do or how it's going to bode for the average citizen. I'm also interested to see how it's going to work in Europe, because obviously there's a whole host of legislation and there are bodies such as our own Commissioner Mann here in Ireland who have been calling for more protection on these platforms rather than less. I think it is definitely going to be an interesting test case for Donald Trump's second term as US president to see how much he is willing to go up against the European Union and other governments, as Mark Zuckerberg alluded to there, in the interests of what they're calling free speech. I think it's going to take another while for people to process and dissect what exactly this is going to mean across the board. But as always, I would love to hear your thoughts. You can email me techtalk@newstalk.com. But that's it for me this week. I'm about to head home back to Ireland, where I will be in studio with Shane and Kira on Monday's News Talk Breakfast. If you have any questions for me, the email address again is techtalk@newstalk.com. And I will be back in studio next week. But in the meantime, have a great weekend.